Job Ride.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is December 2nd, 2025. And our top story this morning is another example of just how bad the real economy is. And of course, the real economy, I mean, outside of Ponzi schemes, shit coins, and AI, you know, the old bubble stuff, the everything bubble, outside of that, the real economy, it sucks. In the last couple of days, we've talked about porta potty companies going out of business, pallet companies going out of business. And then late last night in Freight Waves, shout out to my buddy Pasta Man who sent me this one, as well as Craig Fuller from Freight Waves. 10 Road Trucking, they're shutting down. They're just turning everything off, turn off the lights. No mention of bankruptcy or anything like that. So I don't think they're not being seized by lenders. I don't see any private credit angle. They're just like, I don't want to do this anymore. We're going home. 2,500 trucks off the road. That's 2,600 drivers, more than 5,000 employees. This is the largest trucking company, the largest hauler of U.S. mail. So this is going to cause quite a problem for the post office. And it's the biggest trucking shutdown since Yellow went bankrupt in 2023. Oh, that's right, 2023, when the trucking company went bankrupt. Why? Because the economy has been in a recession since 2022, even though back then we tried to define our way out of it, and then we started to put lipstick on that pig and paper it over with, you know, government deficits running at 6-7% of GDP and this AI circle jerkonomics, whatever's going on there, creating all this fake economic growth. And sure, sprinkle some crypto Ponzi schemes in there while we're at it. Meanwhile, real stuff, building houses, shipping things on pallets, contractors who need a place to go to the bathroom on the job site, and now the people carrying mail, they're all going out of work. If you don't have a real economy, what is the point of all of the stupid data centers that are supposedly going to make everything so much more efficient? Nothing's working. This sucks. And what caused this? What caused this recession that has now killed the trucking company, one of the biggest haulers of U.S. mail? Well, it was the Federal Reserve and the ridiculous response to COVID and all the stupid money printing that drove up prices for everybody and then caused a cost of living crisis that has now resulted in a recession. And so what's the solution? We're going to put another dove in charge at the Fed. That's the solution. Yep. Just keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Yes, that is the definition of insanity. It's also policy for monetary policymakers. Kevin Hassett has emerged as the front runner to be the chairman of the next Federal Reserve, replacing Jerome Powell when his term expires. Kevin Hassett is the current director of the National Economic Council. He's been heavily involved in a lot of the tariff negotiations recently. He was previously worked for the American Enterprise Institute. That's a conservative economic think tank. He worked on the campaigns for President Bush, for John McCain, for Mitt Romney, and of course, President Trump. Look, this guy's not a lot of private sector experience here. I mean, he's worked for think tanks and he's worked in politics. I don't know that he's ever run things. I don't know. I didn't have that much time to research the guy. Maybe he did run a thing at some point, at some time long ago. But from what I can see, he's a politician and an academic. Oh, great. That's just what we need. More politicians and academics making decisions at the Federal Reserve. And of course, he is an Uber dove, and he's already talking about lower interest rates for things like cars and things like homes and things like credit cards. You know, all the stupid crap along with the money printing that caused the inflation, that caused the recession that we're currently in. Now, Kevin Hassett has not been announced as the next Fed chair. President Trump has been teasing that, but he hasn't made the announcement, but he is the clear front runner for the job. There's a number of other current Fed governors that are also on the list. I've also heard Scott Bessent's name thrown around, but I don't think he wants the job, to be honest with you. So, yeah. Get ready for more Zerpenberg, guys. And I said this prior to election season. You know, I obviously have my personal preferences, but at the end of the day, it was going to be more money printing and more rate cuts. That was going to be what comes out of it. And I wouldn't have mind being wrong about that one, but apparently not. We've also got PMIs came out yesterday. The ISM manufacturing PMI came out. That was pretty bad. Everything went down except prices. Employment's down, new orders is down, activity's down, but prices are up. So we got that going for us. The S&P Global U.S. Manufacturing PMI came out on the same day. The numbers looked a little better in that one, but some consistent themes, higher prices among them showing in that one. We've got Klarna is in the news saying they had a 45% increase in their Black Friday sales year over year. So now we know where all that additional spending on Black Friday came from, which we talked about yesterday was due largely to price increases and tariffs and things like that. Actually, less stuff selling. But apparently the money to finance all of that, those higher prices, yeah, it came from buy now, pay later debt. And I still have to tell you guys, there's something about buy now, pay later is not sitting right with me. The delinquency numbers that these guys report, these 2.5% delinquency rates, when we're seeing delinquency rates in every sector of finance on the rise, and then you look at the profile, the credit scores of the average buy now, pay later borrower, no freaking way. The numbers just do not make sense, do not pass the sniff test. Where are these losses hiding? Because I'm willing to bet a major percentage of that 45% of people up year over year who use buy now, pay later, I'm willing to bet a major chunk of them have no intention of ever paying those loans back. And of course, those loans are being securitized and dumped into our retirement account. So congratulations, everybody. You bought some deadbeat's Christmas presents with your retirement money. That's great. We got Michael and Susan Dell are donating $6.25 billion for Trump accounts. I just love the smell of taxpayer-funded exit liquidity in the morning. We've got the Bank of England is lowering capital requirements for banks, even as those banks are still sitting on a massive pile of unrealized losses from the last time all the banks failed. Well, yep, that's still going on. IBM CEO says the AI math ain't mathing. No surprise there, but an interesting article and some pretty potent numbers in that one. We've got the former governor of the Reserve Bank of India is in the news warning about private credit. He's a new name in a growing chorus of people who are warning about cockroaches, about garbage debt. Guys like Jamie Dimon, Jeff Gundlach, now the head of the former head of the Indian Central Bank, all warning about private credit. Even as money flows into private credit in record amounts, driving the yields on that debt down amid a wave of bankruptcies, how does this make sense? Because private credit is nothing more than a fee shop. It's not their money that they're lending. They don't care that the debt is garbage. They just need to keep the flow through the pipeline so that they can collect the fee every time. And well, if a couple of innocent people's 401ks get wiped out in the process, that's just a price they're willing to pay. We've got Costco is joining a list of companies that are suing the government for tariff refunds just in case the Supreme Court strikes them down. That's interesting. And the government is taking a $150 million stake in a chip laser startup called X-Lite. That's interesting. CHIPS Act money going to that one. I have some thoughts on that, but you'll have to stick around towards the end of the show for that one. In the meantime, why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button. And you new guys, hit that subscribe button right next to it so you can come have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this one every single morning. And right now, stocks are up to start the day about 27 points higher, 0.4% in the green ahead of the opening bell for the S&P. The Dow is up 151 points or 0.32% ahead of the open. And the NASDAQ is up 125 points, 0.5% in the green. Stocks up pretty much across the board this morning. The dollar is pretty much unchanged here, 99.43, 2 basis points higher than we were yesterday. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields higher on the long end of the yield curve and lower on the short end as we approach the inevitable December rate cuts. The 30-year Treasury, 4.763%, that's higher by 2 basis points. The 10-year's at 4.112, higher by 1.5. The 2-year, 3.529, that's lower by a point and change. And a big move down in the 1-month, 3.866. That is lower by almost 6 basis points, or about 5.5 points here. Again, I think the likelihood of the December rate cut is driving that one lower this morning. Looking over at commodities, it looks like metals are taking a breather this morning. Although metals were deep in the red earlier, now they're actually just barely red here, and we even got a little bit of green. Spot gold, $4,222. That's off by about 10 bucks or 0.22% lower. February COMEX gold futures, 4,254. That's down 20 bucks or about 0.5%. So gold's still in the red here. But we got a little bit of some green shoots here. 58.13 for spot silver, higher by 11 cents or 0.18%. Silver took a beating earlier this morning. You can see the intraday lows, 56.59. We were way down. Now we're back over 58 here. Silver is showing some resilience. Now the March COMEX futures are still in the red a little bit, off by 35 cents or 0.59%. Currently 58.79. Guys, we were over 59 for a little while yesterday. Man, metals are just ripping. That's not right. Did we hit 59 yesterday? Who's counting? Silver's just ripping here. Anyways, taking a breather for the moment, but we had an intraday low of 57.24. Either way, I like the shiny. Silver's got a long road from ahead here, guys. Copper lower by about 0.1%. Platinum lower, 1.8%. Palladium up by 1.5%. And WTI crude oil at 59.01, down 31 cents or 0.52%. My moderator, Mish, pointed this one out this morning. We've got an ounce of silver has almost reached parity with a barrel of oil. And that's not something I normally care about. It's just kind of a neat thing. Has that ever happened before? You probably got to go back to like the 1970s and before the 1970s, maybe even the 1960s to get anywhere near an ounce of silver parity with a barrel of oil. But hey, that's kind of cool, isn't it? Bitcoin's looking good this morning, 88,292, bouncing off of yesterday's lows. We hit an intraday low yesterday of about 83 and change. Now we're up a few thousand off that, up $2,000 versus where we were yesterday. Bitcoin still not looking so great though, despite the run this morning. And we got an interesting story here. Crypto retail traders hit hard as strategy ETFs plunge 80%. And guys, this is important because there are so many garbage ETFs out in this market right now. And the market has been cranking these things out with just such alarming efficiency. And there's an endless stream of greater fools who have been buying into this crap. Be careful, especially with these silly levered ETFs, single stock levered ETFs. Well, look at this horror story. Retail investors who piled into Michael Saylor's grand Bitcoin experiment are paying a heavy price. Strategy, the company once hailed for wrapping crypto exposure into a public stock, is scrambling to calm markets after its shares plunged more than 60% from recent highs amid a sweeping digital currency rout. On Monday, Strategy said it had created a $1.4 billion reserve to fund dividend and interest payments, hoping to calm fears that it may be forced to sell Bitcoin if prices fall further. Now, the way they raised that $1.4 billion was by issuing stock to stockpile cash so that they can hopefully survive winter. But of course, that depresses their share price, which makes it more likely that at some point they have to sell Bitcoin. That's not really the story here, though. But for many investors, the damage is already done. The most popular exchange-traded funds tracking Strategy's volatile stock, MSTX and MSTU, which offer double daily return, have both dropped more than 80% this year. That puts them among the 10 worst performing funds in the entire U.S. ETF market out of more than 4,700 products currently trading, just behind obscure short bets against gold miners and semiconductor stocks. A third fund known as MSTP, launched during the cryptomania in June, is down a similar amount since its debut. Together, the trio has lost about $1.5 billion in assets since early October. Retail investors had poured into these funds when firms like Defiance and Tuttle Capital Management launched the high-octane products tracking one of Wall Street's most prominent Bitcoin proxy trades. Guys, these funds have always been designed to lose money. They are dog shit garbage. They are nothing but mechanisms of extracting wealth from retail traders. They charge ridiculously high management fees. And Direction and Tuttle, these companies that are putting out these funds, they make money whether you lose money or not. And it's always been about just using you as a product to get as much money out of you. Be careful. These levered ETFs, zoom out on the chart of any levered ETF over time, and they all look like pump and dumps or SPAC charts. These are garbage. Meanwhile, here's the big one of the day. 10 roads express to shut down operations and end USPS contracts. The closure comes as longtime postal contractor notifies the U.S. Postal Service of its intent to end all routes by January. This might end up messing with the mail. The 10 Roads Group of Companies, one of the largest U.S. mail haulers, has notified employees that it will wind down all operations over the next 60 days and terminate its postal contracts by January 30th, according to an internal email sent to workers on Monday. The memo states that the U.S. Postal Service received 60 days notice from 10 Roads earlier in the day, confirming the company's intent to discontinue service and complete the remaining contract period through January. 10 Roads told employees it plans to maintain the same dedicated and timely service through the shutdown period. If you receive, okay, they're talking about the layoffs here. The company has recently been locked in a labor dispute with the Teamsters, which launched a multi-state strike involving hundreds of mail haul drivers beginning in February. Talks were reportedly nearing resolution earlier this year, though it's unclear whether the shutdown is connected to the labor standoff. So, look, a lot going on in this article here. This is going to mess with the mail service. These are this 2,500 trucks carrying U.S. mail. You don't just replace that overnight. So this company just shutting down operations. I don't see any mention of liabilities or debt or bankruptcy anywhere in the article, and I couldn't find any anywhere. So maybe this is just the company trying to strong arm the Teamsters because they're sick of this labor dispute that's been going on. Or maybe this is just the company's like, look, we can't afford to pay the Teamsters what they want. The Teamsters want it because life got more expensive and now they want to raise to compensate for it. Why? Because the central bankers printed all this money. The economy is in a recession and you can see it in the trucks. You can see it in the pallets. You can see it in the porta potties. You can see it everywhere, except, of course, circular AI deals. By the way, shout out to Craig Fuller from FreightWaves for breaking this story. Craig Fuller will be coming on the channel late Friday. I'll probably be running that interview either Friday night or Saturday morning. So look for that one later in the week. Meanwhile, at the Federal Reserve, as regime change looms at the Fed, one candidate emerges as front runner for chair. And he's a dove, of course. There he is. There's the guy we're all going to be listening to once a month or twice every 3 months when the Fed gets together. He's Jay Powell next time. President Donald Trump knows who he's going to select as the next Federal Reserve chair, but isn't saying yet. Prediction markets have their mind made up, but the front runner is also playing it coy. Of course, prediction markets are betting on this. Prediction markets bet on everything. While the part of the mystery appears ready to clear up in the coming weeks, what's far less certain is the type of environment the new central bank leader will face at a potential crossroads for the U.S. economy. National Economic Council Director Kevin Hassett has been dubbed the clear favorite, buoyed by a Bloomberg News report last week that handicapped the five-person race to succeed current chair Jerome Powell, whose term runs out in May. Asked Sunday about the situation, Trump told reporters aboard Air Force One, "I know who I'm going to pick. Yeah, we'll be announcing it." Beyond that, he smirked when asked about Hassett, adding, "I'm not telling you, we'll be announcing it." This is now Hassett on CBS. "I'm really honored to be amongst a group of really great candidates," Hassett said Sunday on CBS Face the Nation. He did note that markets had a positive reaction to the report of him emerging as the favorite, saying that Americans could expect President Trump to pick somebody who's going to help them, have cheaper car loans and easier access to mortgages at lower rates. All right. Yeah. Look, Kevin Hassett, the market didn't like you. The market likes the easy money that you're going to bring back, which is the reason why the trucking companies and the porta potties and everybody else is going out of business. It's the reason why the economy sucks. And it looks like here he is. I mean, he's saying it ahead of time. Oh, Trump's going to pick somebody who's going to help them, have cheaper car loans and easier access to mortgages and lower rates. In other words, Zerpenberg. In other words, more dovish monetary policy. The same crap that caused the inflation, which caused the recession that has us in this situation. It's another dove. The more things change, the more they stay the same, guys. Just another money printing a-hole, unelected, in charge at the Federal Reserve. And let's talk about the damage that these unelected monetary bureaucrats have caused to the economy. Take a look at the U.S. ISM manufacturing PMI. It fell to 48.2 in November, the lowest in 4 months compared to 48.7 in September. That is the ninth month in a row of contraction for U.S. manufacturing. Anything under 50 is contraction. It was led by pullbacks in supplier deliveries, in new orders, and in employment, with 67% of panelists indicating that managing headcounts is still the norm at their companies as opposed to hiring. By the way, managing headcounts, I'm sure that tested very well in focus groups. That means cutting heads off and firing people. managing headcounts, it's very positive reinforcement of our cutting people and killing their jobs. Also, price pressures intensified. 58.5 versus 58. So prices are up and they're rising faster. Backlog of orders decreased more. On the other hand, production rebounded 51.4 versus 48.2, and inventories fell less, 48.9 versus 45.8. Looking at the manufacturing economy, 58% of the sector's GDP contracted in November, matching the previous month's figure, and the percentage of GDP in strong contraction decreased slightly to 39% compared to 41% in October, said Susan Spence, chair of ISM. And here you can see, here's your 50 level. We have been below that. So in contraction for 9 consecutive months. And guys, just look at a 10-year chart of this. I mean, this is bad. This is really bad. You can see here, we have been in a recession since 2022. We're not coming out of it. All this here, this was fueled by rate cuts and money printing. In other words, fake growth, wasted capital, and now we're all paying the price for it. Now, meanwhile, we got the U.S. manufacturing PMI from S&P Global. That was slightly better, supposedly measuring the same thing, different indicator, similar indicator, different outfit producing it. The S&P Global U.S. manufacturing PMI registered 52.2 in November, slightly above the preliminary estimate of 51.9, but down from October's final reading of 52.5. The latest result signals another month of solid, though moderating, improvement in operating conditions across the sector, underpinned by the strongest rise in output since August, supported in part by a pickup in new orders. So some contradictions here between S&P and ISM. Still, overall demand expanded only modestly amid persistent market uncertainty. Finished goods inventory surged at a record pace for the second straight month, reflecting softer than expected sales. While employment growth reached a three-month high, on the pricing side, input cost inflation remained elevated due to tariff pressures. All right, so they're saying we see employment growth. ISM said people were trimming headcounts or managing headcounts. On the pricing side, though, input cost inflation remained elevated. We see that in both of them. That's the one constant here. Both of them see prices rising faster. Firms continued to pass on higher costs through increased selling prices, though the pace of inflation eased to one of the lowest levels seen this year. Business sentiment strengthened notably, with confidence hitting its highest level since June. So some similarities, some contradictions here. S&P looks stronger than ISM. Meanwhile, Klarna reports 45% Black Friday sales growth in the U.S. That's great. I wonder if anybody's ever going to pay it back. Probably not. Buy now, pay later is fueling Black Friday. Klarna, the digital payments provider, reported a 45% year-over-year increase in sales volume for the period from November 1st through Black Friday. That's just in the U.S., according to a company press release. This strong performance aligns with Klarna's overall revenue growth of 17.82% over the last 12 months, though Investing Pro data shows the company is still working toward profitability. Now, this is kind of interesting, 45% year-over-year increase in sales, but 17.8% increase in revenue. Once again, we got a big difference. Now, that's not an apples-to-apples comparison, but that's a pretty big difference there between how many loans you're issuing and the increases in your revenue. Shouldn't your revenue be going up at roughly the same rate of your loan growth? If people are paying back their loans, then they should, right? Where are the losses hiding in buy now, pay later? By the way, shout out to my friend Lox Ganapathy from Unicus Research, who has been all over the BNPL lenders on Twitter over these last couple of days. Check out Unicus Research on X. She is one of the best. Meanwhile, Michael and Susan Dell to donate $6.25 billion to fund Trump accounts for 25 million U.S. kids. Trump accounts. What the heck is going on here? Well, let's talk about this. Michael and Susan Dell announced Tuesday that they have committed $6.25 billion to fund investment accounts for some 25 million American children. The couple's donation will be the largest ever devoted to American children, according to Invest America, a nonprofit advocacy group partnered with the Dells. Are they feeding the kids? No. Are they housing the kids? No. Are they taking them to the doctor? No. They're buying them stocks. Okay. I'm sure that's what the kids want. It's designed to help families feel supported from the start and encourage them to keep saving as their children grow, said Michael Dell, founder and CEO of Dell Technologies, in a CNBC interview. We know that when children have accounts like this, they're much more likely to graduate from high school, from college, buy a home, start a business, and less likely to be incarcerated. I'd really like to see the data behind that. We know that when children have accounts like this, they're more likely to graduate from high school. Show me the numbers. This is a new thing. It hasn't even been started yet. So where's the data to support that? But I digress. The Dell's commitment goes hand in hand with a new federal government program that allows parents to open tax-advantaged investment accounts for children under 18 with Social Security numbers. Under the federal program, U.S. citizens born from the beginning of 25 through 28 will receive a federal grant of $1,000 to seed those so-called Trump accounts. All right, taxpayer money pumped directly into the stock market. After all, it's for the kids, right? Wink, wink. It's certainly not taxpayer-funded exit liquidity. Parents will be able to open and contribute to these accounts starting on July 4th, 2026, with IRS guidance yet to be issued. The Dells have committed to seed Trump accounts with $250 for children who are 10 or under, but who were born before January 1st, 2025. In other words, those young kids who missed the cutoff and won't get the $1,000 from the government. The Dells are going to give them $250. According to Invest America, the pledge funds will cover 25 million children aged 10 and under in zip codes with incomes of less than $150,000 or less, with median incomes. All right, so apparently if you're a poor kid from the wrong zip code, you're still not getting your money. This makes total sense to give free money to pump the stock market based on the zip code you're born in. Yep, that works. Look, guys, the Trump accounts. Generally, I'm in favor of saving money and starting sooner. But look, right now, all these taxpayer-funded retirement accounts, 401ks and IRAs, what are they actually using them for? They're using them for exit liquidity, for private credit, for private equity, and for crypto garbage. All this crap is being dumped in people's accounts right now because the retirement industry has turned into a toxic dump for worthless assets because the people we are trusting to run it are not trustworthy. They're actually pretty horrible, awful people in most cases. And so is this going to be any different, or is this just going to turn into a taxpayer-funded slush fund that Wall Street dumps its garbage into? Now, supposedly they're saying it's only going to be for U.S. index funds. Okay, until somebody signs an executive order saying let's allow AI slap into these accounts too. And so that's what they're ultimately doing here. They're saying it's for the kids. And what are they funding it with? You know, besides the money that the Dells are donating here, this is taxpayer money that's going to go into the rest of the accounts. In other words, printed and borrowed money from the Federal Reserve, which causes inflation, which makes life harder for the poor kids. These accounts, with the U.S. government operating at huge deficits, these accounts will make life worse for the kids they're intended to help because it's going to cause more consumer price inflation, which disproportionately punishes their families. This is a terrible idea. Meanwhile, the Bank of England lowers bank capital requirements to boost UK lending. Let's not get too deep in the weeds on this one here. They're lowering bank capital requirements. So, you know, right now the banks are required to keep these high value liquid assets, cash, gold, treasuries, in order to offset losses in case there's a run on the banks, they can absorb it. And they're required to reach a certain threshold. Well, they're lowering that threshold. And then what's going to happen? That's going to free up that money. They can make more loans. And of course, they can do more stock buybacks and pay out more dividends. In other words, they can pump the economy, more inflation. They're weakening the regulation on banks, making them more vulnerable because they're like, oh, don't worry, all's clear. We passed our stress test, which we telegraph to the banks every year. We warn them ahead of time so they can pre-position for it and make sure they pass. It's become a silly circus act. Just a reminder, shout out to the Kobayashi letter who put this chart out. It's actually from Augur Infinity originally. Unrealized gains and losses on investment securities. In other words, unrealized losses that the banks are still sitting in from back in 2023, the last time all the banks failed and the government had to bail them out. Still hundreds of billions of dollars in unrealized losses sitting on bank balance sheets, even as the Bank of England lowers their capital requirements. Okay, good luck with that. Gotta pump that economy, right? Taxpayer-funded accounts for babies so they can buy stocks. Sure, why not? Let's lower capital requirements for banks so they can do more share buybacks. It's all about keeping that pump going. And speaking of the pump, IBM CEO says there's no way spending trillions on AI data centers will pay off at today's infrastructure costs. In other words, the math ain't mathing. And now the IBM CEO is saying the same thing I've been saying for 2 years. You can add him to the list. But don't worry, some angry piece of fruit that his $200,000 stock challenge went to zero like in a week. That guy says, I'm full of it. Okay, good luck on your next stock challenge, buddy. AI companies are spending billions on data centers in a race to AGI. IBM CEO Arvind Krishna has some thoughts on the math behind those bets. Data center spending is on the rise. During Meta's recent earnings call, words like capacity and AI infrastructure were frequently used. Google just announced that it wants to eventually build them in space. Sure, why not? Let's put them in orbit. The question remains, will the revenue generated from data centers ever justify all the capital expenditures? On the Decoder podcast, Krishna concluded that there was likely no way these companies would make a return on their CapEx spending on data centers. Let's see, what do we have here? Okay, couching his napkin math was based on today's cost because anything in the future is speculative. Krishna said that it takes about $80 billion to fill up a 1 gigawatt data center. Okay, that's today's number. So if you're going to commit 20 to 30 gigawatts, that's one company, that's $1.5 trillion of CapEx. Krishna also referenced the depreciation of AI chips inside data centers as another factor. You've got to use it all in 5 years because at that point, you've got to throw it away and refill it. And by the way, that 5 years is being taken for granted. Remember, Michael Burry says it's closer to four. Investor Michael Burry has recently taken aim at NVIDIA over depreciating concerns, leading to a downturn in AI stocks. If I look at the total commitments in the world in this space, it's in chasing AGI, it seems like it's going to be 100 gigawatts with these announcements. At $80 billion each for 100 gigawatts, that sets Krishna's price tag for computing commitments at roughly $8 trillion. It's my view that there's no way you're going to get a return on that because $8 trillion of CapEx means you need roughly $800 billion of profit just to pay the interest. And of course, $800 billion of profit will be difficult to come by in addition to its existing profits of $0. Yeah, the math ain't mathing. IBM CEO says the same thing I've been saying. The numbers just don't add up. But hey, you know, Sam Altman is still telling stories by the campfire and everybody's like, oh, it's so great. And then they realize, wait, that's our money that's burning. Oh, crap. Good luck with that. But private credit might be able to feed more money into that fire. And here's the former RBI governor, Rajan, warns of rising private credit risks. You've got another guy warning about the cockroaches and the garbage debt. Former Reserve Bank of India Governor Raghuram Rajan warned about excess liquidity building up in private credit globally, the latest voice to weigh in on rising risks in the asset class. Now, this is interesting because he's talking about excess liquidity building up. Why is the excess liquidity building up? Because of the executive order clearing the way for retirement funds to be put into this asset class. It's not their money. It's our money is what's providing this excess liquidity in this asset class that everybody is now warning about. We are in a period where there's ample credit, our money, and the Fed is cutting, he said, speaking at the Clifford Capital Investor Day event in Singapore on Tuesday. That's the time when the risks build up more. So this is a time to be really more careful. Rajan's comments echo concerns from finance industry executives following recent high-profile bankruptcies in the U.S. Those collapses sparked fears of widespread credit issues and growing worry about the $1.7 trillion private credit industry could be introducing new layers of complexity and risk into the financial system. Last month, Jeffrey Gundlach, founder of Double Line Capital, warned that the next financial crisis will be triggered by private credit as garbage lending renders many assets too toxic to touch. And JP Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon has also voiced concern. When you see one cockroach, there's probably more, he said, even though Jamie Dimon's banker is the one that's financing private credit. I mean, he's talking about cockroaches and, you know, scurrying. Oh, when there's one, there's more. Then why is his bank lending to the private credit firms that are making these loans? That doesn't make a lot of sense. But again, guys, it's our money that's going in here. Like, how do you take high profile bankruptcies, garbage lending, cockroaches, and then you square that with excess liquidity building up? The explanation is because it's not their money that they're lending. It's ours. And they're collecting fees. They're paying themselves handsomely for the service of burning our money. And the RBI governor's warning about it. Meanwhile, this is one to watch out for here, guys. Remember, the Supreme Court is currently deliberating over what to do with tariffs and whether or not they're constitutional. And you've got these lawsuits are building up just in case the Supreme Court strikes down the tariffs. And now Costco joins companies suing for refunds if Trump's tariffs fall. Costco Wholesale joined a growing list of businesses suing the Trump administration to ensure eligibility for refunds if the U.S. Supreme Court strikes down the president's signature global tariffs policy. The nation's biggest warehouse club chain is among dozens of companies to file lawsuits in a U.S. trade court since late October, challenging President Trump's use of an economic emergency powers law to impose the levies, according to court records. It's one of the biggest corporate players to jump into a fight, largely driven this year by small businesses and Democratic state officials. So this is potentially a CF on the horizon here. I don't know if this is going to happen or not. It depends on what the Supreme Court says. But if the Supreme Court were to strike down the tariffs and say, okay, going forward, you can't do them anymore, then that raises the question of what happens to the money that was already paid into those tariffs that the Supreme Court would have just struck down. Does that money get a refund? We're talking about potentially hundreds of billions of dollars here that would have to come out of the government coffers and be paid back to these companies that paid the tariffs in the first place, which could stress the government's checkbook. And when the government's checkbook gets further stressed, what do? They lean on the bond market. So this could actually cause a mess in asset markets if the Supreme Court strikes down these tariffs. Of course, the tariffs may cause a mess in asset markets by themselves. We're just now beginning to see the price increases from them. We knew they were coming. We just didn't know how much. But they are starting to show based on some of that Black Friday data. Keep an eye on this one, guys. Tariff refunds could make a mess. And last but not least, let's talk about this one here. Trump administration to inject up to $150 million into chip laser startup X-Lite. Looks like this is a Reuters article being run in CNBC. The Trump administration has agreed to take a stake in X-Lite, a startup seeking to develop free electron lasers viewed as key to making faster computing chips. The U.S. Department of Commerce said on Monday that the government will inject up to $150 million into the company, but did not disclose the size of the stake. The department's Chips Research and Development Office said that it has signed a non-binding preliminary letter of intent to provide U.S. government incentives. This marks the office's first investment after the Trump administration took over the $7.4 billion Biden-era Semiconductor Research Institute. All right, so this is CHIPS Act money that was already legislated during the last guy's term. President Trump kind of took over this research institute and said, I want to control how that money is being spent. Instead of giving grants, they're taking stakes in startups. And it looks like this X-Lite company is going to be the company that they're going to invest in. Now, there's some interesting things here. X-Lite has proposed using technology derived from particle accelerators to create one that would use far less electricity than current lasers, and is working with U.S. national labs to develop a prototype that could be connected to machines made by ASML or others. There's a lot of non-committal, could, maybe, working towards, develop a in that thing, in that paragraph there. This company has an idea. That's it. They're working with national labs to build a prototype. They don't even have a prototype for their idea. It could maybe be connected by the machines made by somebody else. We don't know because we haven't even built the thing yet. This is a very speculative investment here. Now, again, this was like a research institute that was created by the CHIPS Act. I guess you could argue this was the original intent of the funding, but this seems like a big stretch here. For far too long, America ceded the frontier of advanced lithography to others. Under President Trump, those days are over, said Secretary of Commerce Howard Lutnick in a statement. Aha. X-Lite also now counts former Intel CEO Pat Gelsinger among senior management. He became executive chairman in March. Maybe now it's starting to make a little more sense, right? Former Intel CEO owns a company. Remember, the company took a stake in Intel not too long ago. But guys, this is a highly speculative bet. It's not even a prototype. It's an idea. That's all it is. They have an idea to maybe build a thing. We need the government labs to help us do it. And then maybe it'll work with ASML's technology. And now the government is investing in them. All right. Good luck with that. And I just want to say thank you very much to the Nacho Man who was first today. Nacho Man, quick on the draw. Thank you very much, sir, for supporting the channel. I appreciate that very much. Gary Cronin, 209, says, Melonhead for 4 years, got cup t-shirt. For 4 years, huh? That's interesting because my channel's not even 4 years old yet. Okay. But Melonhead for life. Why not? Sure. Got cup t-shirt. Thank you very much. By the way, guys, the merch may be coming back. I'm close to bringing the merch back. Got one more test. I got to make sure that they actually hold up their end before I put that up there. But things are looking encouraging. So maybe the cups and the t-shirts will be coming back. Thank you very much, Gary Cronin, for being a Melonhead for longer than Melonheads have been a thing. But I appreciate that anyway. Real estate mindset for world peace. Why not? How peace could break out at any minute. Yeah, hope for the best, prepare for the worst, brother. That's all I can tell you. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Hey, check out Real Estate Mindset while you're at it. That's my buddy, Travis. He is awesome and bonkers, by the way. Eric Farmer 17 says, if interest rates drop, what happens with Japan carry trade? Well, the key to the Japan carry trade is the difference in borrowing costs, right? If borrowing costs in the U.S. are much higher than they are in Japan, but Japan's costs are rising and the U.S. cost is coming down, and the arbitrage difference between those two is getting smaller. So the Japan carry trade does not do well with U.S. rates going lower because it's about the difference in borrowing costs there. So not good. That's probably one of the reasons why the carry trade has been doing so poorly recently. Besides the fact that the carry trade, and yeah, that is a big threat out there, and nobody really knows how big the carry trade is. The problem is just ZERP or NERP, whatever we're doing, the ERPs, the lower interest rate policy, doesn't freaking work. It causes waste. And all the problems in our economy are reckless capital allocation resulting in waste monetized by the Federal Reserve, increasing the money supply to compensate, causing consumer inflation, putting people in the poorhouse. And every time they do this, the answer is always more of the dumb shit that caused that problem to begin with. How about we stop messing with interest rates and stop expanding the money supply and stop stupid taxpayer-funded stock accounts for babies that are really nothing more than taxpayer-funded exit liquidity while tech CEOs sell out of the same stocks? Just stop. Just stop. This is sugar high economics. It doesn't freaking work. It never works. The Keynesians are wrong. Keynesians have only ever been wrong about everything. Maybe we give the Austrians a go just once. But nobody wants to be the president who says, economy, take your medicine. That doesn't work politically. And so that's why it just never happens. Thank you very much, Eric Farmer, for supporting the channel. Nashville Pasta Man says, BNPN, buy now, pay never. Yeah, look, the average credit score of a buy now, pay later borrower is subprime. So half of them are worse than subprime. I don't know, what do you call it? Super subprime? I don't know. But besides that, besides the credit scores, there's no recourse. There's nothing to repossess. They don't report the delinquencies to the credit agencies. That may be starting to change, but for now it doesn't. There is no clear legislative definition of a delinquency, which means for all we know, nobody is paying the loan, but they just created a new term for it. It's not delinquency. It's slightly, I don't know, unlinquent or whatever they're going to call it. I don't know. But because nothing is codified in the law, it's not regulated, they can literally lie about their delinquencies by creating their own definitions, their own terms, not warning their bond investors before filling up their portfolios with this garbage debt. And when we're seeing delinquencies spike in credit cards, when they're going vertical in student loans, vertical in auto loans, even starting to rise in home loans, how is it that buy now, pay later debt is stuck, frozen around 2.5%? The simple answer is it's not. And they're lying. That is the simplest explanation for this. For all the things that would have to happen for people to pay that debt before their student loans, before their car loans, before their credit cards, before their house, does not, for all those things to happen, defies belief. It defies logic. Thank you very much, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. T.A. Chapman says, happy Tuesday, Jack. Like and subscribe. Plus or minus $50,000 for Bitcoin as a bottom. I'd say you're right in the neighborhood there, T.A. Chapman. I am thinking the bottom this time around will be in the 50s. I think they'll take their time getting there. I think we're probably talking around next summer, next fall timeframe. But the blowups haven't even started yet. That's an important thing to keep in mind here. We have seen a pretty substantial pullback from Bitcoin, but we haven't had the freezing of withdrawals or the down for maintenance that all the exchanges have whenever things get hairy. And we haven't had the bankruptcies and the big Ponzi schemes exposed, at least not the big, big ones. So that hasn't even started yet. I do think 50 is in the cards. My target is roughly in that neighborhood as well. Thank you very much, T.A. Chapman, for supporting the channel. Nashville Pasta Man says, I'm giving data center credits to the kids for Christmas. That's the gift that keeps on giving all year, Clark. Now, don't you go falling in love with it because I'm taking it with me when we go. Yeah, data center credits. That's the magic funny money that is propping up the AI bubble. I suspect that when OpenAI made their investment in Thrive yesterday, which is interesting because Thrive is an investor in OpenAI, so they're giving Thrive their money back, and then Thrive's going to give that money to OpenAI's customers. OpenAI's customers will give it back to OpenAI. Oh, my God, I'm getting dizzy. I suspect OpenAI is buying their investment in Thrive using data center credits. I don't know that for a fact because they didn't release any of the details of this deal because OpenAI's books are a black box that money disappears into, never to be seen again. It's like the Bermuda Triangle of finance. Yep, data center credits. I did a video about that one, by the way. It's in my AI Mania playlist if you want to check that one out. Riveting stuff. Thanks again, Pasta Man. RB Trash says, Michael Dell, students who are wealthy enough to have these accounts are more likely to. There, I fixed it. He must have just forgotten that part. Well, I could say it's the opposite of that, RB Trash. Like they said, the accounts for what the Dells are doing are going to be for kids in zip codes with median incomes below $150,000. So it's kind of arbitrary, though, because, okay, median incomes below $150,000, you're eligible. What if you're a poor kid in a town where the median income is $151,000? You're just as poor as the kid on the other side of that invisible line, but you're not getting the money in your account because you're on the wrong side of the line. It strikes me as a little arbitrary. It's still, I mean, look, they're donating $6.25 billion unless they're getting some kind of other deal. I don't know, government giving money to Dell for keep the AI bubble inflated. They are the Dell founders, after all. I'm sure they own a lot of Dell stock. I hope this is not a quid pro quo. Giving a lot of money to kids, generally a good thing. Giving a lot of money to kids. Oh, it's not money. It's stocks. It's index fund to a kid who's got nothing to eat. I don't think that really helps that kid. And also, I just think it creates opportunity for Wall Street to be themselves and steal more. That's my opinion on that. Thank you very much, Arby Travis, for supporting the channel. Hunt and Cover, been a melonhead for 21 months, says, hijack. Our economy has been hijacked. I see what you did there. Never say hello to me on an airplane. That's all I can tell you guys. Yeah, our economy, it has been hijacked by Keynesians. And unfortunately, they have cleared the way for the grifters, and they've made white-collar crime essentially legal for a fee. Sad reality. Thank you, Hunt and Cover, for supporting the channel. Strong Market Research is a new member. Welcome, Strong Market, to the Melonheads. I appreciate the support of the channel very much. Just a reminder, guys, members get one free Super Chat a month. Use that, and I will read and respond to your questions on the air. KDM says, what's the lifetime interest calc on that $1,000 seed money? Ka-ching. Okay, maybe. I see what you're saying. Compounded over the lifetime. Time in the market beats timing the market, right? That's that thing that investment managers always say during recessions so that people don't pull their money out and their management fees don't go down. I'm generally a proponent of that, of compounding over time and spending more time in there, generally. But when I see what Wall Street inevitably does with these accounts, we're starting them limited. You can only buy an index fund and it's going to have a dividend yield. Okay, yeah, I get that. But it's not going to stay that way. They can't help themselves. Sooner or later, private equity and private credit is going to be dumped in this garbage. And by the way, the S&P 500 is full of private equity and private credit companies. So it's not like they're not exposed to that, even if they're just buying index funds. I just think it's more of an opportunity for the government and for Wall Street to end up robbing people. And it's taxpayer money being pumped into the freaking stock market to the benefit of the elite ownership class and the detriment of the people they're supposed to help, because monetary expansion is what's funneling and financing these investments. It's most hurting the people they're trying to help. So even though, yeah, the lifetime interest calc, assuming somebody doesn't steal from the kid in the, between now and the time they mature, I just think it's going to hurt them more. Over the course of their life, the inflation is going to hurt them even more. Thank you, KDM, for supporting the channel. Troy Rhodes 2653 says, does buy now, pay later go on a credit report? If not, I'm going shopping. It's supposed to. They're supposed to be changing that. The industry is fighting it. Apple is supposedly reporting their BNPLs to the credit agencies. I've heard mixed things about this for about a year now. There's been talk, but I haven't heard about it yet. And again, what is the definition of delinquent on a buy now, pay later loan? The companies can still lie their way out of that. Even if they say we're going to report our delinquencies, they can still lie about what their delinquencies are by saying, oh, in our opinion, a delinquency isn't somebody who's late on a payment. It's something else, even though it's exactly what a delinquency is. So I think they are going to get, they're going to play fast and loose with the definitions in order to get out of doing it. And again, it just doesn't pass the sniff test what they're claiming about their delinquencies. It just doesn't add up. Thank you, Troy Rhodes, for supporting the channel. KDM is back again. He said, I meant the national debt. Okay. Now, KDM, honestly, now, okay. So let's reread this one. What's the lifetime interest calc on that $1,000 seed money? So we're not talking about the interest the kid is going to earn. We're talking about the interest that the government is going to pay on that. Well, that is a totally different question, isn't it? Well, let me ask you this, KDM. In order to calculate lifetime interest, we need to come up with a date in which that debt will be paid off. And by paid off, I mean no longer accruing interest, not paid off with new debt. So right now, that number approaches infinity because we are on pace to never pay back that money, which meant it will never stop accumulating interest, which means infinite lifetime interest cost. Isn't it funny how that works? Your government, your tax dollars at work. Thank you for that clarification. Entirely different question from that angle. Very much so. Thank you, KDM, for supporting the channel. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Appreciate all the super chats and the generosity, you guys. Also, thank you to my magnanimous Melonhead members on YouTube, Patreon, Buy Me a Coffee. You guys rock. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.